Blog Talk Radio.
Began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win. You are listening to our weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Listening Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.uslistenerus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. At that time, you will be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you haven't already done so. We do have a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as have your topic suggestions for future programs. Go to usliftingus.com. You can reach the Ulu community through the members-only portal. When you register for the Ulu community, please use the same name you used when you signed up to join Ulu. Registration is now open for our 2024 Movie Annual Convention and Members Meeting, which will be held on Saturday, the 9th of March, and Sunday, the 10th of March in Atlanta. The theme is UBC's It's a Family Affair. Go to www.uslistenus.com to register and or to sign up as a sponsor. I'm Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Shibaka, who, like me, is a member of UMU. The topic for tonight is, are we prisoners of war, or Black, or African American? Peace, Brother Shibaka. How are you doing this evening?
Greetings and peace to you, Sister Q. I'm doing very well. I had plenty of rest yesterday. The weather, at least down here, has been okay. So I'm ready to engage and converse with the family. Thanks for asking.
Thank you, Brother Shibaka. We always look forward to your the sharing that you do on our program. Oh, so Brother Shibaka, tell the family, are we prisoners of war? Are we Black? Are we African-Americans? What are we?
Thank you for that question, Sister Q. It's very important. And I can say, fortunate for us, in my opinion, we are not citizens, probably closer to the prisoner of war. And let me explain what I mean. I want to share with you at least a contemporary definition for illustration of citizenship as it is in the current era. And this is the era in which we have Europeans, which are supposedly divided into democracies and communist states. And of course, everybody else is trying to copy them. All right. When we start to begin and go south. But it's important for us to have an understanding of that, because associated with that is a legal association and terminology, which is supposed to characterize rights and obligations that an individual might have being a part of a contemporary state. Now, what I mean by that? Citizenship, at least when you get it out of the current Webster's dictionaries and what have you, essentially denotes membership. It denotes membership in a political community. Now, political just essentially means that you have a community and you have activities in of people in that community whom we would call members, all right, and they are engaged in the running of the state or the running of the community in this term, all right. And so you have membership, all right, which will bestow upon them civil and political privileges and, of course, obligations. One might be, if we take in consideration the United States, you know, you're supposed to have all these rights, all right, and privileges. And, you know, one of the obligations used to be, you know, you could be drafted to go to war. All right. That was an obligation. That was you. You said for all these privileges, particularly the males anyway, for all these privileges, I have an obligation to protect the community, the state, you know, or country that I'm a part of. Now, to be a citizen is to hold a position of rights and responsibility in that society. Mm-hmm. In a democratic society, supposedly, in a democratic society, all right, such as the one we call here, the citizens are also supposed to be the rulers of that society, okay? But this is not actually a democratic country. We are a federated, federated republic of states. In other words, we have 50 states, which are essentially like 50 countries, all right? Mm-hmm. And they come together, all right, and have an agreement by coming together as 50 states, all right, It would assist in providing protection for them so that they could operate and do commerce throughout the world. Each state has the ability to do commerce throughout the world. All right. And it allows or gives some of its power to the federal, which helps to negotiate for the states, all right, ensuring the commerce and resources that is assigned from one state, all right, to any other country in the world. So we have this union, all right, of states, 50 right now, wasn't always that number, all right, which come together, all right, and they assign some of their sovereignty or power to this federated body, all right, for primarily protection and to advance commerce internationally. All right, so we have that. And so now, but the fundamental thing is that you have a state or country or society, all right, which has members, and these members are called citizens, those that are called citizens, because you could have some members that are not citizens.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And they have certain privileges, but they also have certain responsibilities so that they can keep the state as it is. Interestingly, you know, I raised the question to myself. I wasn't talking to anybody, but to myself. I said, now, is a corporation a citizen? Well, it turns out that a corporation by the Supreme Court is a person, all right, but it's not a citizen, okay? All right, so as a person, in other words, a person without the privileges associated with citizen, all right, but it's allowed to be able to function. And in fact, we can say that some of the privileges that corporations share far exceed those of the ordinary citizen, all right, particularly mm-hmm. wealth, okay, the creation and transformation of material to create wealth. All right, so corporations are not citizens, but they are persons, all right? And as a consequence right. of that, they don't share the same kind of things that we might share as citizens. In other words, protection, privileges that we have, some of them, since we are in a democratic, supposedly a democratic republic, all right, we can assign representatives to protect our interests and safeguard our interests. And with the introduction of the party system, Democratic Party, Republican Party, as a consequence mm-hmm. of the introduction of those, all right, it allows us to be able to influence what is supposed to be three separate branches of our federated state. And that is, you have the legislative branch, which is represented on the federal level by Congress. And each one of these three positions has the same characterization and looks on the state level. But you have the legislative branch, which makes the laws. All right. You have the executive branch, which is supposed to enforce the laws. And then you have the judicial, which is supposed to identify if any of the other two branches are breaking the law, as well as any of the members of the state, in other words, the citizens, if they wish to mm-hmm. have a resolution of any problems that the citizen have with its individual state in which it resides, or the United States, of which also it resides, all right? And so the judiciary is available to do that. Now, let me take us. Sister Q, prior to the Civil War, what was the black man's status and black woman's status in America? Prior to the Civil War.
They were basically private property, right? They had no legal status.
That's right. They had no legal status. They had no citizen status. They were private property. So they definitely weren't citizens. So it's a misnomer right. when you hear some people say, oh, yeah, talk about us coming over here as if we, voluntarily came over here. And then they had the audacity to say, yeah, these are Americans who were enslaved. Now, I'm using the title American to represent citizens of those people in this land we call America. In fact, we call it the United States, all right, which means the states, all right, united, all right. And so these states coming together call themselves America, United States of America.
Right.
All right, that's what it's USA. That's really the title. We say America, but you can't really say America because we have North America and South America. Then you have Central America, which also has states, but they're not part of the United States. All right, so we have to say what we are, the United States of America. All right, and so prior to the Civil War, we were not citizens. During the Civil War, we were not citizens. In fact, with the passing of the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863, the United States was engaged in a civil war, all right, with the Southern states, all right, who had left the Union. So they did not really have any jurisdiction to enforce, all right, the emancipation, which supposedly freed us from slavery. All right, that's another trick. And of course, the historians, who are mostly white, try to make it seem like we all had equal status. Just some of us happened to have been enslaved. No, we were not citizens. We were not never citizens. Never citizens. At the end of the Civil War in 1865, with the passage of the 13th Amendment, all right, this is an amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America. It freed us from slavery, but we weren't citizens. Okay, you got that? We were free.
Right.
They said, "No, you can't throw that man out there on the plantation anymore." You know, except I'll tell you what that exception is. You can't throw that man out there on the plantation anymore. All right, and so what you have. We were not freed in 1865. All right. The 14th Amendment is really what gave us citizenship, so-called. All right. All right. So it gave us citizenship, so-called, but that wasn't ratified until 1868. It came about in 1865, 1866. All right. It was ratified. All right. So it wasn't until 1868 that we could say that, well, we were transforming to citizens. So on up to the beginning of this country and before, with the beginning of this country back there in the 1700s, all right, late 1700s, we were not citizens. All right, 1865, the Civil War ended. We were not citizens. 1868, all right, was ratified. Supposedly that made us citizens. Supposedly. And I'm going to tell you why I have a hint. But now let's take a look at that Emancipation Proclamation. As I said, it came out in 1863. All right. And this is how it reads. Nice, tricky words. That on this first day of January, in the year of our Lord, 1863, all persons held as slaves within any state or designated part of a state, the people whereof shall then be in rebellion against the United States shall be thenceforward and forever free. That's just saying that the nice legal term just to say that the Africans who were enslaved by this proclamation became free in 1863, which had no jurisdiction in the rebellious states in the South.
Right.
And now remember now, the United States, family, I want you to pay close attention to this. The United States, all right, is a collection of states, many countries, all right, who decide to form a union because of their association to the landmass that they were on. And at the same time, remember now, these were colonies originally from England. They also were in competition and war with Spain, which also had colonies on this landmass, and France, which had colonies on this landmass.
Right.
So you see that those of us who were brought over here, captured, all right, were not citizens when we came over here, were not citizens when the colonies rebelled and established their own governments, whether it was France, well, not so much France because we bought France territory, but especially the Spaniards, all right, because the Spaniards rebelled against Spain. And, of course, the British colony rebelled against England, all right. So during that period of time, all right, 1863, they had a proclamation out, but it was not relevant where we were. In fact, it wasn't even relevant in the states where they did not have slavery. You know why?
Why?
Because, number one, it was a proclamation put out by Lincoln. He did not have the power to enforce that on the states.
Okay.
All right? The states had rights in this union, okay? He had to get the states to agree to that. He just put it out there. He was a politician. His aim of putting it out there was so that the Africans in the southern states would rebel.
Okay.
That's why he put it out there. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on for a minute.
Okay.
Hello?
I see that we have a couple of hands raised. So when Brother Shabaka comes back and finishes his point, I will get to people with their hands up.
Yeah, I'm with you.
We have a couple of hands
sister.
Raised, Brother Shabaka. So all, when you get finished
already?
With your point, we're going to take these couple of questions. Go ahead.
Okay, well, anyway, let me finish the Emancipation Proclamation. All right. Didn't free anybody, okay,
right.
Because they had no jurisdiction in the South. And Lincoln had no power over the states that did not have slavery, all right, to insist that. Now, it wasn't a slave strait. They had this imaginary line that they used to call the Mason-Dixon line. Above that line, you had no slave, wasn't a slave state. Below that line, you could have slave states, all right.
Mm-hmm.
But you could have also slavery inside those states. Because you had slavery inside of Maine, you had slavery inside of Massachusetts and all that stuff. But it was not declared a slave state. So let me stop with that and let me address anybody that has a question or comment.
Okay. Let's go with the question. Caller with the last four digits, 4953. Please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment, or ask your question. Thank you.
Well, my name is Pianchi. I'm calling from the Delta region. But your speaker is absolutely right. Lincoln had no authority over the states that had seceded from the Union. It's just like a wife leaving a strange husband. They voted to join. They voted to leave. An example is Texas. Texas seceded from Mexico, and then they fought a war. Now, you may mention about slaves being kidnapped. Those Africans were not kidnapped. They was gotten rid of. That has been going on for over 1,000 years before they ever met any whites. But that's a whole different conversation. Here in the United States, the Indians, emancipation did not free slaves that was with the Indian tribes because Indians was their own sovereign nation. And they didn't begin to free theirs until 1866, the Creek, the Choctaw, and so on. And they said the only way we would give up our property, you would have to compensate us for it, which the government did. They made the last payment, about $350,000, to either the Choctaw in 1950. I would have to check my notes to see which one was real. But that's the way it went down. Lincoln didn't have that power. The federal government does things today that it's unconstitutional for it to do. The federal government gets its powers from the state. The state's supposed to control the federal government. Court, the judges in courts do not make laws. Matter of fact, states don't have to pay the Supreme Court any attention whatsoever. All those judges do is give opinions based on the argument between two or more parties. The Supreme Court and federal courts have no enforcement powers whatsoever. And you see that being worked out with Texas protecting its borders from the invasions coming from the South. Texas and any other state have a right to protect its citizens and protect its borders. And the federal government has to get permission to come within those borders. If an FBI agent come up to your house, you don't have to say a word to them. You should call the sheriff. The sheriff has territorial jurisdiction. He's elected by the people. That's the way that should go down. But, and I don't know your name, sir, people are ignorant to the facts, and they just let these things happen.
Thank you, Brother Pianki. Our speaker is Brother Shabaka.
Thank you, Brother Shabaka. I just
want
to add that.
Are you there, Brother Shabaka?
Yeah. Did you say it was another caller?
Yes.
Did you say it was another caller? Yeah. Let me. Let's get another call out here.
Okay. Caller with the last four digits 7563. Please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment, or ask your question. Hello? 7563.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. I had it on mute. My name is Minnie Zonkel. I'm calling from Indianapolis, Indiana. And I just wanted to, make a comment or make a historical correction about the them bringing us from Africa. Now, historically, no one ever came here directly from Africa. Everyone went to the Caribbean. The people that they took from Africa went to the Caribbean, and the slave trade went back and forth. It wasn't just them bringing people over here, but it was also them taking our people back overseas. The only slaves that were actually bought directly here, which there were very few that actually were snuck through, but these were the first slaves to actually come here in 1619. And that those were slaves that were rescued from a Dutch, the Dutch rescued them from a slave ship or something like that. I forget. I'm not looking at the exact history of it. But when you look at the 1901 congressional record, they, in a nutshell, they tell you that the Negroes ordained the Constitution, and they literally say this. I just wanted to make that statement because we've always been foreign to them, and this is in the congressional records, but when they came through, they wiped out everything that we had. They wiped out our histories, our cultures, our everything. And when they finally freed us after those 200 years of slavery, unmitigated, torturous slavery. They came out with the 14th Amendment in the 1868, I believe.
Excuse me.
However,
hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Excuse
yes.
me.
Can you?
You yes. are getting ready to talk about what our speaker is getting ready to talk about. So,
okay.
Can we just thank you for your comment?
Yes.
And then
yes.
you can listen to what our speaker is going to say on that subject. Okay.
Okay. All right.
We appreciate your call.
You for
appreciate your call.
Thank
yes.
you.
Brother Sabaka, would you like to continue?
Yeah, thank you, Sister Q, and I'd like to take and thank the two brothers for their comments. I was just trying to say within our legal structure, when I say our, I'm talking about this country's legal structure, and some of the mm-hmm. definition associated with the documents that they threw up, it's questionable whether we, who were brought here, we were not slaves when we were brought here. We were Africans, and some of the documents I have, what I'm going to speak on, says that we were attacked, and I will bring that out too. And therefore, the question of whether we were prisoners of war comes to play if we were attacked, brought here, and then placed on plantations, and then from those plantations, ghetto colonies that sprang up. With limited resources, were we in fact citizens, all right, or still perpetual prisoners of war, all right. And now since the UN, and I'll get into that, but I just wanted to share that. And please, I appreciate people calling in again. I'll remind you, we're living in 2024. We are interpreting the documents that preceded us by, you know, decades, if not centuries. So, and of course, the language has varied a little bit. So we mm-hmm. just interpretation and given our opinion of what we think happened because we weren't there. We just give it, but they didn't write a lot. The European, the white man writes a lot. He's pretty proud of what he did, his accomplishment in colonizing the world. But anyway, what I was talking about, and the brothers had brought up the 13th Amendment, and as the first one talked about, the Emancipation Proclamation didn't free anybody. All right, and the 13th Amendment, which came out in 65, 66, all right, just removed that heading, that label of slavery. In fact, it says that it says neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crimes whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Now, what that was, in other words, that was a fishbone thrown back to the Southerners, because what it says is that we're going to remove servitude and involuntary servitude, we're going to remove slavery and involuntary servitude. Voluntary servitude was all right, but involuntary servitude, and that might be a question of law, we're going to remove that except if you commit a crime. And so it left it up. That was a bone thrown to the Southerners. They were, look, we're going to remove slavery because we just beat you, all right? But we understand that, you know, the slavery economy out of which 60% of U.S. exports during that period of time, or before the war began, was in cotton.
Mm-hmm.
That was gold to the United States. All right, during the war, that was disrupted, and so therefore, where were the Africans, black folks at the end of the Civil War? Well, they were mostly in the South. All right, so but they had to be freed, you know, because if it wasn't for the blacks, remember now, in 1863 is when Lincoln came out with the Emancipation Proclamation. The war was at a standstill. The North was not winning. until they got, you know, until the blacks began to get into some of the army and became agents for them, as they told them where the Confederates were, because they knew the landscape in the South. The North didn't know where anything was in the South, except they just knew they just go south and they would run up, all right? And they had some intelligence. Well, who brought them the intelligence? Okay. So it was our participation that allowed for the South to lose, all right? And therefore, they had to promise the people who aided them. In fact, a group of people with Ulysses Grant over there in Mississippi acquired land, as the brother talked about, in the Delta area, before the people over there the Carolinas, Carolina and Georgia, with the Sherman's Field Order Number 15 acquiring land. All right, that thing was rescinded when Lincoln was assassinated and Johnson got into power. He rescinded all that. And he even gave the Southern planters reparations for their loss of property. We were the property. All right, so the 13th Amendment freed us, all right, except if you go to jail, go to prison, and the white folks could enact any kind of legislation in the South to keep us on the land. You understand that? That was the bone thrown to the South. All right. So we were freed. We were freed, so called. But that second part, that exception clause in the 13th Amendment allowed us, the South, to re-enslave us. And they did that. The 14th Amendment is the kicker. Now, remember now, I said that the 14th Amendment came out in 66. It was ratified in 1868. So up to that time, we were not citizens. We were not made citizens. All right. And then it goes on to say this, 14th Amendment, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge, that means, you know, reduce, cut off, the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. Now, we weren't citizens yet. Remember, now, we were freed, but we weren't citizens.
Right.
Nor shall any state deprive any person. Now, when we were free, we were elevated to persons. You follow me? Before that, we were property. We were less than a dog, a cow. All right? Now we became freed. That made us a person. But at the same time, as you know, I just talked about earlier, that corporation can be considered a person, but they can't be a citizen. All right? Mm-hmm. All right, so we were persons. Not citizens. We were persons. All right, of liberty, of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the law. All right, that was essentially said in the 14th Amendment. The kicker in the 14th Amendment was Section 1. And let me read that for the family so they are sure on it. Section 1 says, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens. Well, if we were enslaved, we were born in the United States because the slave trade was halted in 1807. So we're talking about, you know, we're up in 1865, 1866.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Technically, no Africans were brought to this country after 1807. All right. Now, so Section 1, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privilege and immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the law. All right, not a lot of words there, right? The 14th Amendment created a new class of people. You say, well, how is that? It made us citizens of the United States.
But not the states.
It says And this is why you got the stuff going on up to the present time. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Before you, to sort of be a citizen of the United States, you first have to be a citizen of the state in which you reside. But mm-hmm. in the state in which we reside, we were chattel slaves. We were not citizens.
Okay.
We had no rights. Okay. In 1857, the Dred Scott decision, all right, said, no, you are nothing but Negroes. I want to say another word, but I'm not going to say it. All right. That's what the Supreme Court said. All right. No,
mm-hmm.
there is nothing that requires the white man to give any kind of privilege to you as a citizen. Essentially, that's what it says. I'm paraphrasing it. All right. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was in 1857, just before the Civil War broke out in 1861. All right. So up until that time, we weren't citizens. And now the 13th Amendment, which freed us, said that we could be re-enslaved. And now this thing says that we are a new class of people. We are citizens of the United States. It is the state that made policy for the United States as it was then. And that's how they placed it in there. So then you have to say, well, can the United States do that? Well, remember now, the South had been defeated.
Okay.
All right, the South had been defeated.
Mm-hmm.
So the South,
okay.
And then they introduced Reconstruction right after that. So the South had really very little to say. All right. They had to go along, but then again, they sweet-toothed this. They gave the South reparations, all right, to the planters, all right, and at the same time,
mm-hmm.
it said that, look, we got to get the cotton economy going, so I'm going to allow you the capabilities to re-enslave the slave by, you know, locking them up.
Mm-hmm.
That exception
mm-hmm.
clause in the 13th Amendment, all right, keep that in mind,
mm-hmm.
all right. Now, the 15th Amendment, the rights of the citizens of the United States, the rights of the citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied. All right, so up until that time, all right, it was ratified, the 15th Amendment was ratified in 1870. Up till that time, we were supposedly freed. It was 1865. All right, we were made citizens, but we couldn't vote until 1870.
Hmm.
Because the right of the citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any states or on account of race, color, or previous conditions of servitude. That means if we were a slave at one point, all right, after that we could now vote when we became freed. Ratified in 1870. All right, so you say, well, what's going on? Let me stop here, sister, just to see if any more callers called in. Because I'm going to get ready to roll now. Because I'm going to
No, we don't have any more questions. Roll on.
Okay. All right. Now, what I'm pointing to is that there's a question, and let me show you how questionable it is now. This is a decision. This is the NAACP. So we're not talking about slavery. Okay.
Okay.
This is the NAACP versus Arkansas Board of Apportionment. Apportionment means, you know, how they usually go and gerrymander it so that there is more people who can vote with the introduction of the party system for one candidate
mm-hmm.
With insufficient number of human resources to be able to pull the candidate that you want in. This is what the argument is, and this was decided in November of last year. So we're not talking about 18 anything. We're talking about, you know, 20s, okay?
20,
so I want you to keep that in mind. Look, it says mm-hmm. a federal appeal court ruled that voters and groups like the NAACP cannot bring cases under Voting Rights Act to challenge discriminatory voting practices. No court has even ever ruled that voters cannot bring cases to court. All right. In 2021, Arkansas NAACP brought suit challenging new redistricting lines in Arkansas that stripped power from black voters and prevented them from being able to elect candidates of their choice. This was known as vote delusion. All right. And it is illegal under Section 12 of the Voting Rights Bill of 1965. In fact, the right to vote, the right to vote really didn't come about for blacks legislatively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had the 15th Amendment, but remember now, the 15th Amendment made it such that you could vote in the federal government because you got your citizenship as a citizen to the federal state. You did not get your, you were not necessarily made citizen except by that law, all right,
mm-hmm.
in the states. The states did not grant you citizenship. It was the federal
right.
government giving us a new class that grants you citizenship. And they said the states, because they had just whipped the southern states, you know, better not do anything about it. And it made you legally a citizen of the state in which you reside. The states didn't do that, particularly the southern states didn't do that. They didn't abide
right.
by that, and they didn't go best with the rules. With the, you know, this was an amendment, and, you know, with the amendments, you know, you got to have everything set up. You know, like if I introduce an amendment to the Constitution, first of all,
mm-hmm.
two-thirds
mm-hmm.
vote, you know, in the Congress, you know, and it can pass, and then I got to go to the states. I got to get three-fourths of the states, all right, to agree to it.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't happening, sister.
Okay.
Did you hear what I'm saying? You know, now
mm-hmm.
in the readings I have now, brothers and sisters, call me back. Show me the documents. It ain't happened. All right, there was a lot of discussion and all that, but it mostly took place at the federal level. Okay? It didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that three-fourths thing, that gives us some ambiguity about, you know, how much of a citizen former enslaved Africans were as a consequence of that. So I'm just saying that what happened and what they've written gives us some doubt as to our legitimacy to say that we are in fact citizen and therefore we deserve the same rights as whites, white landholders, in fact. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
The NAACP argued that the state should have been drawn at least four more majority black districts to account for the Arkansas black population. All right, the Arkansas black population, I mean, Europeans control the state. Why would they want to do that? All right. And so they didn't want to do that because they didn't want to give us any power. It's not a thing. All right, so even though the NAACP had a strong case, all right, that the vote, that the there was a Voting Act Rights Act, you know,
mm-hmm.
was being violated, the state of Arkansas told them where to shove it. All right? The state of Arkansas told them where to shove it. States' rights.
Mm-hmm.
States' rights. And that's in 2023. And this is when it was in November 2023. A federal appeal court argued they could not bring the case. And lawyers with ACLU have requested a full court ruling. Full court. They want the full court to presence. Not just the ones who sat on the appeal court that listened to the case. All right, that was in 2023. All right, so that was not in 1823. It was in 2023.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
I want to make that clear. It was in 2023. All right. So
mm-hmm.
again, states' rights and the federal government. The federal government created a new class. It made us citizens at the federal level and then imposed citizenship at the state level. This, in 2023, Arkansas says, shove it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, not citizens.
All right.
Here.
Not
we have
citizens
a call,
here.
Another caller, Brother Shabaka. So do you mind if I take this call?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Hey, Brother Shabaka, mm-hmm. I just want to comment on two more things that I'm leaving. Lincoln could emancipate those slaves that had sought refuge behind Union lines, but the other ones he couldn't. Now, as
right.
far as redistricting.
Hold on a minute. We're having trouble with the board. If things are lighting up, they should not be lighting up. Okay.
Mm.
I'm trying to get to the call. Oh, where'd it go? Okay.
Can I finish?
I'm trying to, I'm trying to get to another caller. Thank you.
Maybe I can talk to you about this some other time. I'm getting ready to go. Thank you very
much. Okay, thank you. Thank you for joining us tonight. Caller with the last four digits, 7204. Please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment or ask your question. Are you there? 7204.
I'm sorry. This is Deborah. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah,
hello?
Greetings, Sister Deborah.
Okay.
How you doing?
Greetings to both of y'all. How y'all doing?
Okay.
I just wanted to add that when you said when we were able to vote, that really you're talking about the men. The women weren't able to vote until around the 1970s. The black women, okay. I think the white women were included in that. But I just wanted to make
correct.
That clear. Just wanted to make it clear that we didn't get to vote until around 1970, something like that. Okay.
You are correct. The voting
yes.
was only for males.
Yes.
The voting at that time were for males. The right to vote by the 15th Amendment was only for males. You
right.
are absolutely correct. And it
exactly.
was for black males. Okay. They made
exactly.
it for black males. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which they didn't give it to. So, you know, no, the women didn't enter the picture. All right, I want to speak very quickly because I know the time is running, Sister Orm. Why I think that we might still be prisoners of war. All right, in June 18, 1452, in fact, this is this papal bull is being contested, and I think that some people went over to Rome and argue about this papal bull because, you know, they rescinded it, you know, because people say, well, are you still out there trying to attack us? But anyway, this is the papal bull by Pope Nicholas V on June 18, 1452. I tell you, the Europeans write down everything. Says, this is what he says. We grant, he's talking about the papacy, grant to you full and free power through the apostolic authority by this edict, that's the papal bull, to invade, conquer, fight, subjugate the Saracens, that were the Muslims, and pagans, that was us, all right, and other infidels and other enemies of Christ, and wherever established their kingdoms, duchies, royal palaces, principalities, and other dominions, land, places, estates, camps, and any other mobile, immobile goods found and all this, da-da-da-da-da, by the same Saracens or pagans or infidels, all right, you are to confiscate all of that stuff, all right, and enslave the people. This was the papal's bull by Nicholas, Pope Nicholas V, June 18, 1452. He gave that to, all right, King Alfonso of Portugal. He told him to go out. Now, I want to give some context because remember now, this is only a few years after the Moors were expelled, and the Moors were Muslims and black.
Mm-hmm.
They were Moors, okay? All right, so he had declared war, all right, and that's exactly what Portugal did. Spain followed and brought groups to the U.S., and then the Dutch got in it. The French and the British got in it. Now, the question that might be before the International Court of Justice, did that authorization given by Pope Nicholas, all right, was that an act of total war against Africans? And then Africans, if they were captured, became prisoners, and then when they were brought here, as the brother said earlier, they were brought here to the Caribbean and Central and South America. That's where they first came. And then eventually they came up to Mobile, all right, in that part, in the lower southern states. And then go all the way to South Carolina and then up to the northern states, all right, did that create total war? And now when you talk about did it create total war, and then you look at, well, what happened? Well, with the UN coming in and forming, all right, and they made it that you had crimes, you know, that had no limit. In other words, the crimes could continue. Did that say that now the International Court, this is some other groups that are this is not me saying this, I'm just picking off what they have. They're taking this to the UN, and they're saying that the activities of the British, the Spaniards, the French, the Dutch constitute not only war against humanity, all right, but a war in which the prisoners were captured and then enslaved. Okay, did that happen to us here? And so therefore, with us leading, as we begin to struggle, we know that it was questionable about our citizenship. All right, now, is it questionable about whether we were prisoners of war? How have we been treated? How are prisoners of war treated? All right, as a consequence of just saying that, all right, cases are being made, all right, on the reparations front. All right, on the reparations front, when 1865 happened, we should not have been made slaves. At very least, we should have been given a suggestion, all right, of what to do. Do you want to return back where you came from? Do you want to create, this is the new African terminology, do you want to create a state here? Because in Mississippi and then on the East Coast, land was given. And the land that was given was for some autonomy, all right? In fact, it says in there that do you want to create a colony? In other words, under the U.S., but not necessarily mingling with other whites. And 19 out of 20 people, blacks who represented their districts who've been following Sherman, all right, said they wanted their own land. They wanted the land, and they didn't mind being a colony, but they didn't want any rule coming from the Europeans. They wanted to govern themselves. And, of course, citizenship or immigration to another country was the four, at that time, was the four choices that should have been given to us once they freed us. And they gave us citizenship, questionable citizenship on the federal level, all right, which was contested by the behavior and action on the state level, okay, all right, because the European knew at that time that if I made you a ethnic minority, I can always outvote you because you're a minority. Let me say this about the Geneva Convention. I wanted to say just a little bit about that to show you. In 1949, the Geneva Convention, Article 4, defines prisoners of war. All right, the present convention shall apply to persons referred to in this article from the time they fall to the power of an enemy until the time that they are released, which is why I said, now, if they freed us at that time, which means they released us, these are the four things that they should have asked. Do you want to return where you came from or where your ancestors returned? Because we've been here a couple hundred years at that time. All right, since you said that you want land here, all right, in order to be able to do that, do you want to create a new state for yourself? All right, do you want to become citizen? Not make a citizen. I need to ask you, do you want to be citizen? All right, and then they would have had to negotiate that with the states. You understand what I'm saying? Because it's usually the other way around. You state of the place in which you reside, and then that gives you citizenship at the federal level. But here they made a citizen at the federal level, did negotiate with the states. And as you can see, Arkansas right now is battling the NAACP in 2023. All right. Sister, I think that's all I got to say. Let me really appreciate the brothers who joined us. I want to just make a quick comment. Can I have time just to make a quick comment about how I see One of the important things is statehood, you know, seemed to be paramount now in the reparations era. All right, they're talking about repatriation and all that other kind of stuff. They're talking about plebiscite or referendum. In other words, giving people a choice and this is directly people involvement, people elected, not getting your representative to elect. And right now, I think the best structure that we need to do is to enhance and develop the structure that ULU has right now and how we develop in our economic field. Since 1865, we have been scattered. In a lot of places that we have been scattered, you know, we have built large populations. We have a large population in urban centers. In some places, we are the majority population in urban centers. But we do not have any expression of power to govern as a consequence of our numbers. A large number of people have returned to the South. The South is still the majority population, about 51-52% of us still has stayed in the South, all right? And we have gotten there. So the Republican New Africa wanted to make all of the Black Belt South, you know, five states anyway, liberated and sovereign. But now ULU looks at the fact that we are scattered and concentrates on the development, all right, in those states. And look at areas. See, there are several areas that Europeans have fashioned through the UN in which they see how to govern it so that there is an exchange of finances to keep those things sustained and going. We have to look at those areas where we are and take control of them. We have that because we have the population. All we need to do is to convince the people's mind not to spend it on cake and jewelry and all that other kind of stuff. Begin to put those things into a pool and then use those resources, all right, to invest, to build up those areas. And we have nine areas. There's nine areas that we must develop and have businesses in those areas, which is what ULU is attempting to do. All right. Regardless of whether I am in Chicago, Baltimore, Broward County, or whatever it is, or any place in the South, I begin to develop those areas. All right. And then once I have the economics, I then can control the politics. All right. I think that's it, sister. Thanks a lot for allowing me to just mention that. Maybe we need to bring up another show in which I could talk a little bit more on the plan and how it is consistent with the fact that even if we are not citizens, all right, and even if we are prisoners of war, just like on Gaza, you know, Gaza, in fact, black, so-called black America is like Gaza, just that we don't think that we're like that because we're not being bombed. But we're being constantly interrogated by the police force, which is the occupation force. Because we don't have any arms. That's the only difference. The Hamas has arms, we don't. Except arms to shoot ourselves. Thank you, sister.
Thank you, Brother Chewbacca. Listening to what you said, particularly about the citizenship in the U.S., that we're citizens of the United States of America, but not citizens of the individual states, clarifies a lot of things that are going on, like with the immigrant, what they're calling the illegal aliens, they're calling them. So
yes.
On the federal level, the states are, let's put it on, for us that are classified as citizens of the U.S., of the United States of America, but are not citizens of the individual states, the states have no obligation to do anything for us, and that is why they can, since they've chosen to identify as sanctuary cities or whatever they're calling themselves, they can put their resources to another group of people, because we're not their problem. We are the property, so-called, of the federal government, and that distinction you made between the states' rights and federal rights and all of that plays into that, but we haven't been taught the nuances of all of that. So I'm very grateful to you for making even that little bit of stuff clear tonight. Thank you very much. We also want to thank everyone that joined us for this evening's program. We invite you to join us again next Thursday evening at 9:00 p.m. for another installment of the afternoon. Peace.
you have to say.
Thank you.